The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Do your employees come to work with enthusiasm, or do they dread it? While a demoralized workforce drives lower creativity, higher turnover, and poorer quality work, few managers realize that they are often the prime cause of this situation. Welcome to the Leadership Hour, where leadership and inspiration intersect. In her show, your host, Christine Cowan-Gascoigne, explores what leaders can do to accurately assess their leadership acumen and act on what they learn. Now, here is Christine Cowan-Gascoigne.
Good morning. According to the Gallup Organization's 2013 report entitled State of the American Workplace, 70% of the American workforce is either disengaged or just plain miserable. And those disengaged employees aren't just unhappy at work, they are busy acting out their unhappiness. Every day they undermine what their engaged coworkers accomplish. And Gallup has estimated that this costs American businesses somewhere between $450 and $550 billion each year. The root cause of this abysmal state is what Gallup referred to as, in quotes, managers from hell, close quotes, which are everywhere and mostly unaware of their toxic effects. My guest today, Susan Inouye, I-N-O-U-Y-E, a University of Southern California educated executive coach, states that her coaching clients start out claiming that their employees trust them, yet their subordinates say just the opposite. Ms. Inouye's gift-centered approach to coaching, which she calls sawubona, from a Zulu word that means I see and understand you, has spurred transformational change in more than 600 businesses in nearly two decades. Her book, The Millennial Solution, Sawubona Leadership to Engage Every Generation, will be published later this year. Welcome, Susan.
Oh, thank you, Christine, for having me here.
And as we were talking before we started recording the show, I am so excited to have Susan as my guest because this is a topic that I have been focused on, obsessed with since 1989 when I quit my last job in corporate America. So this is kind of the high point of the of my radio shows. I'm really excited. So let me start out by asking, Susan, you know, what in your life led you to pursue a career as an executive coach? How did you get in this field to begin with?
Yes. Well, I really didn't seek it out. It actually found me. And what had happened was is that I was, at the time, producing and in the production end of the entertainment industry. And the leadership style in entertainment is more command and control. Yeah. A lot of yelling, a lot of screaming, and you're lucky to be in entertainment. So what happened for me is I was starting to get physically ill, and knowing that, you know, who I was much more than what these people that were executives, which I didn't call leaders at the time, were trying to bring out in me. And so in my search, I discovered people who did personal growth and development. I had never really heard of it back then, and it was a new world to me, but it was something. I started going to seminars, reading books. I said, wow, and I actually did it. That was the key. I just didn't read about it. I did it. And what happened is that my life changed forever. Friends of mine saw the change in me, people that were business colleagues of mine, people who I had led to do projects and films, said, what is going on with you? You're so different. You're so calm. You're so grounded. You know, one of my friends asked me if I was on drugs. I said, no. I said, but the drug I am on is, you know, finding myself. And it changed my life forever. And then what happened was is that one summer, a good friend of mine, a business colleague, who had seen my change, she said, "Susan, I want you to coach me." And I said, "What do you mean? I don't coach." And back then, coaching wasn't as popular as it is today. And she said, "I want some of that. I want you to teach me what you're doing." And so without really knowing how to coach, I started to coach her. And she made her first million in her first year. And she said, "If you don't become a coach, I will be on you, because your overall purpose in life, you've told me, is to make a difference in this world. And you can't deny people your gifts." And so that's how I was led into coaching. And it's really my calling.
You allowed me to read a draft of your book, which I just think is wonderful, and everybody should look for it when it comes out. But in it, you talk about working for a consulting firm, a human resources consulting firm. And so is that what happened? Then you went and found a job where you could do this work?
Yeah, what happened was is that I was led into a national company where I got into sales. One of my gifts is gaining rapport with people. And our division, the Western division that I led, became the number one sales area in maybe 10 months. And people wondered what I was doing. And what I was doing was not actually the things that salespeople normally did. I was really becoming a better person and better leader. So I did a university program for the entire company that people would fly in and take, and it was for several days. And people went away just really high on what they got. They said, "Oh, my gosh, this is great."
So what was the program called?
it was really called Millionaire University, because the whole thing was to get to our goals of the millions, right? And what happened was is that I noticed that when they went back to their regions, that they were excited and they got a lot of insights, but they didn't do any of it. And they went back to who they were.
Yep.
And I said, "Wait a minute.
Training's not enough."
Yeah. And so I really realized that insight, those aha moments, are not enough to create lasting change. That you really have to add practices that are unique to a person that they do on a consistent basis, because then they lead to the habits that lead to competency. And that's what coaching does. It adds those extra pieces. That training gives you insight, but those extra pieces are so needed for transformation. And so there I knew the value of coaching. I said, "This is what I need to do."
Well, that kind of answers what my next question was going to be, which is what led you to the conclusion that teaching leadership skills, what might be called an intellectual approach, wasn't enough? And it's because you would see clients go back to their places of work and behave just the same way that they always had, because they don't, darn it, they don't know they're doing it.
The thing about it is, Christine, we're a very cognitive society. We're taught many, many different skills or external things that we need to do. And so most of my clients who are executives know what to do, but, the reason they don't actually do what they know is because of these internal habits and patterns and blind spots that prevent them from getting there. And so if you don't address those things, they won't change. They'll be just short-term fixes. And so engaging what I consider to be the intelligence of your heart and your body is so important for lasting change. And one of the things I have found, I'm an ex-dancer. I did that when I was very young. But I've learned that if you don't change the way you feel in your body, you will not permanently change. And so the field that has arisen from this is somatic. Somatic practices, the field of somatics, is because somatics deals with the entire body and the being, which you have to address to transform a person.
So how common are dysfunctional managers? You know, are they everywhere? Just a few of them in every company? I mean, what has been your, have you ever met someone that didn't have some dysfunction?
Yeah, I think that's a label. I mean, we all have our gifts, what I call our gifts and our blind spots and our patterns. The key is, I mean, the reason, can I talk a little bit about Salbona leadership?
Because yes, because we're, yeah, we can do that now. There's no
reason. It's so powerful. And maybe I can talk to it in the context of this. You know, in defining actually Salbona leadership, I think we, it's important to be aware of where, first of all, where leadership is heading in terms of the movement that's been happening over the last decade from this very authoritarian style of leadership, and some people call it command and control, to this new normal. And the new normal is a more appreciative, compassionate, and gift-centered way of leading. And managers, you know, of years ago, prior to millennials, they were taught command and control. They don't know any better. They just don't. And it's been passed down through boomers to Gen X's. And then I think the other important thing is to understand what is pushing this change. And the third thing is really why a leadership style like Salbona leadership is the new normal in the 21st century, because it's a style that emerged from the largest population that's now entering the workforce, Generation Y or millennials. And it addresses their needs, but I have found that it addresses the needs of other generations as well. And, you know, as you mentioned in the very beginning, Salbona actually means, it's a Zulu greeting meaning I see you or we see you. And it's about I see beyond the physical being into the heart of who you truly are. I see your gifts, your blind spots, your strengths, your weaknesses, your genius. I see all of you. And I think you know this. If we accept people for who they are, they accept us for who we are, and then a different conversation of openness unfolds. You know, not one of right or wrong, but one of acceptance and understanding. And so Salbona leadership, the reason it's different, it's not, it's unlike most leadership styles that tell you how to get an employee to be their best self. A Salbona leader starts by recognizing that people are already their best self. They see them, what, gifted in the way that they are, and they develop the whole person so that individuals will strive to live up to what we call, I guess, the highest potential. And it unleashes this inner drive I've seen to go beyond what is expected to invest in themselves, the work, and the organization. And the results that I have gotten is as employees unite behind a company's success, so it achieves its mission and, you know, much more. You know, one of the things about Salbona is at the heart of it is this gift-centered approach that you were talking about. And our core belief is that everyone is born with gifts and a purpose to share with the world.
I want to hear more about this. We need to take a short break, so stay tuned, and we're going to get into the three core principles of Salbona, Sawubona, leadership right after our break. Stay tuned.
Today, enterprise technology is both strategic and global. Each week on CTN CIO Talk Network, IT thought leaders from around the world share their experience with listeners as they discuss with Sunjog All how they are trimming costs and partnering with business to innovate and help IT become more competitive, better care for customers, and improve the corporate bottom line. If you want to keep up with IT thought leadership, listen to CTN CIO Talk Network with Sunjog All at CIOTalkNetwork.com.
Many industries have been revolutionized by technology in the last decade. Books, music, TV, communications, and now it's happening to our money and the way we pay. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how technology and customer behavior will bring about more changes in banking in the next 10 years than in the last 200 years. Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific on Voice America Business Channel or on AM 1160, The Voice. You'll never look at your bank account the same again.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Costa, host of The Costa Report, every Tuesday at 6 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. My guest this week was Secretary of Housing and Urban Development under President Clinton, Mr. Henry Cisneros, who'll be here to talk about 13 trends which make investing in real estate in urban centers a sure bet. Don't miss Henry Cisneros this Tuesday at 6 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. on the Voice America Business Channel.
You're listening to The Leadership Hour with Christine Cowan-Gascoigne. If you have a question or comment about today's program or want more information, send an email to info@theleadershipcompany.com. That's info@theleadershipcompany.com. Now, back to The Leadership Hour.
Welcome back to The Leadership Hour, where leadership and inspiration intersect. This is your host, Christine Cowan-Gascoigne. My guest today is Susan Inouye, an executive coach who has embraced what she calls Sawa Bona leadership, which means I see and understand you at a very deep level. We were going to talk about the three core principles and also where it came from. Which subject do you want to do first, Susan?
Well, maybe I should say where it came from. So people can understand that it's really deeply rooted in the ability to transform and save lives. It was actually early 2000 that I became a part of a leadership movement that started to emerge. And at the center of our conversations was what was happening in companies regarding leadership styles that needed to change. And while this movement away from this authoritarian way of leading to more collaborative one was slowly happening, it was becoming obvious to all of us that a shift to a new normal was important in order for us to move into the 21st century. And I think the big wake-up call for a lot of us and for companies was 2008, where we had that sudden downturn in the economy. And I started to hear talks about a new normal that was emerging. It was in articles, it was in books, it was spoken at conferences. And people called it like conscious leadership, mindful leadership, appreciative leadership, and heartfelt leadership was another name. But for me, none of it was compelling enough. And it was around the same time that I started to also study Generation Y and millennials by attending a lot of seminars and starting to read books. And I had a personal interest because I was mentoring my nephew, who is going through NYU and a millennial. And then at the same time, I started getting calls from executives very frustrated with this generation, which they called entitled, and they were struggling to engage. And while I had insight into how to work with them, I really didn't get them. And I was struggling with my own nephew. So I was actually really on the lookout for someone who got this generation.
Can you just for a minute define millennials for those people out there that might not know exactly what, born between when and when?
Yeah. So the millennial generation, or Generation Y, was born between 1981 and 2000. So that makes them right now between the age of about 16 and 35.
Okay, so Generation Y is interchangeable with millennial?
Yes.
Okay, they're the same group. Okay, keep going.
Absolutely. So anyway, a friend of mine called me, and because he knew that, and he's a business colleague, a former executive, so I had a lot of respect for him. And this man wasn't moved by many leaders, but he said to me, "Susan, you need to see this man, Tony LeRae, and his organization, Youth Mentoring." And one of my friend's gifts is that he is good at discovering outliers. And we know that outliers are just people who are visionary thinkers and doers. And I think Malcolm Gladwell said it best. He said they tend to detach themselves from mainstream thinking to see new possibilities. And so he said, you need to see his work. He's an outlier. And he's transforming these lives of at-risk youth, all millennials, in ways that are significant and profound. And when I challenged him to give me some backup, he said to me, "Okay, Susan, here's some hard statistical facts." And so he told me that Youth Mentoring had mentored thousands of youth. Today, it's over 4,000 in 15 years. And he said 96% of these youth that they mentor are graduating from high school in areas that they serve where the graduation rates are only 27%. And 70 to 100% of those graduates go on to college or trade school. And through this gift-centered approach, they have stopped three nascent gangs. And today, just to update you, the gift-centered approach is being used in countries like Peru, Jamaica, China, and last year, the Republic of Singapore actually invited Tony to teach the gift-centered approach to all the ministries of their country that come into contact with at-risk youth. What the ministries of, I think, education, law, social and family development. And most recently, youth mentoring is now working with the U.S. United States Army National Guard in what they call their Sunburst Youth Academy to turn around the lives of high-risk youth. So, of course, after seeing all these hard statistics, I said, yes, I'm interested. So long story short, this is how I discovered Salbona and the gift-centered approach. Tony's approach was very similar to mine, but the distinctions that he had were very unique and profound. And the results he was getting was compelling. Because these are the three core principles that you want to talk
about. What I was going to lead into.
Yeah. He connected with the millennials, and he received what it is they needed and wanted. And that's the first core principle, connect and receive.
And what that translates into is build real relationships, correct?
Right, because connection, we don't define it as communication or connectivity. It's not about texting, tweeting, emailing. It's about how I feel when I'm with you. And the second thing that I saw him do, and this is how the three core principles emerge, is he saw their gifts and he helped them to bring them out and develop them. And that's the second core principle, is to see the gifts in people. And we define gifts as what you were born to bring naturally into this world, what you take for granted, what you do without thinking about it. And so Tony saw their gifts. And then the third thing that he did, which is the third principle of Salbona leadership, he created a community where they felt safe, a sense of belonging. And he called it, he gave them a better gang to belong to. And so the third core principle of Salbona leadership is create a Salbona culture, a sense of belonging where people feel a part of something greater than themselves.
And how you define that in the book, what I took from it is that there were kind of three parts to creating a Salbona culture. One was to replace expectations with intention, which allows creativity and how to do the job. It's the opposite of micromanaging, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. The thing that I found about expectations, and many of my colleagues have found it, is expectations, when you have them, they are your rules for how things should be done. And when people don't fulfill those expectations, there is a lot of pain and suffering that we have. Because, it's not exactly the way we see it. But instead, if we have intentions, like we have, like someone is trained in something, and if our expectation is now that I've trained you, you should be able to do it and not make any mistakes, then we'll be sadly disappointed or have a lot of pain. But if we have the intention to train people, to mentor them, to help them develop their gifts, to be able to turn their blind spots into strengths, then we give them an opening to become more. And we don't get disappointed when they make the mistakes. We just help them to grow and learn and be more.
Right.
Yeah.
So the second part of the Salbona culture is to replace authority with authenticity, level the hierarchy, and respect everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's so key because authenticity is so important to millennials. And, we have found that authority is let me just say something about authority in terms of the millennial generation. The millennial generation has been wrongly accused of not really liking authority, and it's not actually true. What they have said to me is, Susan, it's not that we don't like authority. It's that we don't feel that we should be able have to talk to someone in a position of power or someone who is our elders by looking good, by saying what you expect us to say. We want to be able to say what we believe, and we can do it in a respectful way. We can respectfully respond to our elders. And the other thing is to understand is that this is the first generation that didn't have to go through authority to get information. So just because you have a bunch of information that, you know, is really great, it doesn't impress them because they could go on the internet and find that information.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah, what they're looking for is your experiences, and they're looking for you to bring them in and mentor them and to not lecture down to them. They hate lecturing. I
right.
think most of us do, though, you know?
I agree. And that's what I love your title is it's the millennial solution. But you know what? It appeals to every generation. It's the way we all would have loved to be treated from the beginning.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that I say the first sentence in the book that I say because I want to make sure people know this is not how to fix millennials. It's
right.
about their solution about how to lead and how to change the world for the better. And what right. we can learn from them.
We need to take another short break. We've got one last quality about Asawa Bangla culture to talk about, and then I want to talk about maybe a couple of case examples that you might have had and how this works.
Yeah.
So let's take a short break. This is Christine Cowan-Gascoigne, host of the Leadership Hour, where leadership and inspiration intersect. Stay with us after the break.
Tune in to The Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, with co-hosts Ron Baker and Ed Kless. Ron and Ed will show you how to recognize that wealth is created by intellectual capital. It's all in the possibilities that we can create and that are created for us. These possibilities are destined to be discovered by human imagination and through the service of others, creating a brighter future for all of us. The Soul of Enterprise is heard live every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel and simulcast at the same time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Christine Cowan-Gascoigne designs and facilitates leadership development programs, teaches interpersonal skills, delivers keynote speeches, works as an executive coach and a licensed psychotherapist, and consults in human resource issues. Christine is also adjunct faculty at Case Western Reserve University, teaching leadership theory and practice to master's candidates. Her unique background, an undergraduate degree from MIT, an MBA from Harvard, and a master's in social work from Case Western Reserve University, combined with work experience as a management consultant with McKinsey & Company, has positioned her to be equally effective with chief executive officers, middle managers, frontline employees, and students. Visit theleadershipcompany.com to check out her articles, list of services, and client testimonials. Discover why Eaton Corporation, the U.S. Coast Guard, Stanford University's Graduate School of Business, and soon your own company are among the organizations who work with Christine. Questions or comments on this or on the show can be sent to info@theleadershipcompany.com.
Are you a business leader or executive that wants to achieve more? Not just in it for profit, but to do work you find meaningful that adds more value to more people in more ways. Listen for the Business Elevation Show with host Chris Cooper. You'll hear from successful achievers from around the world with the passion and experience to offer invaluable guidance. The Business Elevation Show can be heard live on Fridays at 8 a.m. U.S. Pacific Time, usually 4 p.m. U.K., on the Voice America Business Channel. Be more. Achieve more.
You're listening to The Leadership Hour with Christine Cowan-Gascoigne. If you have a question or comment about today's program or want more information, send an email to info@theleadershipcompany.com. That's info@theleadershipcompany.com. Now, back to The Leadership Hour.
Welcome back. My guest today is Susan Inouye, an executive coach who has embraced what she calls Sawabona leadership. It's a way of working effectively with those of the millennial generation, and in fact, all of us would like to be treated the way Sawabona advocates. So we were talking about creating a Sawabona culture. We talked about replacing expectations with intentions to allow the employees to have creativity in how to do the job. We talked about replacing authority with authenticity to level the hierarchy and respect everyone, because millennials are used to a democratic source of information, the internet. And the last principle is to replace bottom line myopia, a focus on profits, with belonging. So a shift from being mission rather than profit driven.
Right.
You want to talk yeah. about that a little bit?
Yeah. And this is so important, because if you, you know, if you create a place where people can, you know, where you see their gifts, where you help them to bring out those gifts and help to mentor to develop those gifts, and help to turn whatever their blind spots are into strength, what happens is, of course, the bottom line is that they will absolutely lead to your profitability. And, you know, maybe I can share a story that will help people kind of understand how this can happen, because sometimes people say that Sawabona leadership sounds a bit soft, and it's really not soft at all. It has some very hardcore results. Can I share
yes,
story
please.
Of one of my clients? Yeah. This is a story of one of my clients, Samantha, and it was in the end of 2010, and if you recall, we were in a downturn in the economy, and banks had a sullied reputation. And Samantha, or Sam as I call her, she is the senior vice president and the regional manager of a bank, which is a subsidiary of a very large international banking corporation. She came to me, and she wanted to increase her book of business. Now, Sam was a top producer, but her profit lines were flat. And everyone told her not to worry. You know, we have to just ride this out. But Sam felt that something could be done. And so when she came to me, I said, Sam, I understand your external goals. I said, but in order for us to get you there, we have to focus in on what you can control. And because profits are the byproducts of many things that are difficult to control. But what we can control is within you. And that's becoming a better person and a better leader. And so that's really one of the first steps in Sawabona, is we focus in on what we can control. And what we can control is our gifts, our blind spots, and our patterns. And we hone in on two things: our gifts, what we were born to bring naturally into this world, and the other side, which is our blind spots, those things that keep tripping us up. And so what we did for her, we aligned the external goals with the internal gifts that allow her to get to the goals. And in Sam's case, her external goals were to increase her book of business. She wanted to have balance, and she wanted to get her people to work more effectively together. And then we addressed the blind spots that were preventing her from getting to the goal, and we turned them into strengths. And we
How did you identify her blind spots? What did you do to help figure them out?
Yeah. So the way that you identify people's blind spots is actually through their gifts or through the actions that they take. So, for example, one of Sam's gifts was she had the gift of being analytical. And the first thing you do is you define the gift. You know, how is the gift defined? Because the blind spot is usually the opposite, but not necessarily the opposite, of a person's gift. But the key is to define the gift. So we defined her gift of being analytical as being good at analyzing numbers for a role in financial. You know, she was a thinker. She tended to look at what was wrong, and she saw the glasses half empty. And so the other side to this gift of analyzing, what we called with the intelligence of her head, was connecting to people with the compassion of her heart. So when you look at gifts and blind spots, a person who has the gift of planning, the opposite, or depending on how you define planning, is usually letting go and going with the flow. Because people who see the world through the gift of planning do everything through planning everything. And when things don't go according to plan, they struggle with being flexible and going with the flow and changing direction.
Would you actually interview the client's employees to get a sense, to confirm this information? Would you do a focus group with them or something?
Well, this is the way that I do it, and I found it most effective. First of all, you know, I have them sit down and put down what they feel their gifts are and to define them, and what they feel their blind spots are and define them. I also ask them to find about five people who are close to them, that know them, that they respect, and who want the best for them, and who will be honest with them, to then tell them what are their gifts and blind spots and define them.
Yep.
It's so powerful, because when they hear it from, and they can pick anybody, it doesn't have to be in the company. It can be, you know, their spouse, it can be their children. I've had a lot of millennials. The wisdom that they have to tell their parents, who are an executive of a company, what their gifts and blind spots are. I had one millennial have 2 pages. And she defined it so beautifully. And when I asked my client, I said, my gosh, she is amazing. He goes, well, she's studying to be a psychologist, Susan. But it is, you know, a lot of my execs say, I didn't know I was this good. Or, you know, I thought I had covered up this blind spot. I didn't think I had it anymore. But it gives them a sense of, wow, for a lot of them, I didn't know I was this good. I didn't know that people see this in me. And there is a feeling when we know that people see us as gifted, that people see who we are and have accepted us, that it's human nature. This is why Salbona works. It's about transforming, you know, about human nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in Sam's story, we dealt with her gifts and her blind spots, and we turn her blind spots into a strength. And a strength is something that we work hard at to be competent in. It's different than a gift, which is what we just do naturally. And strengths take a lot of energy and effort, and gifts fill us with energy and are effortless. But as we went on this path with her, and we actually ended up developing the intelligence of her heart, which is something that a lot of people have said, like, what do you mean by that? And there is a wonderful book that I lead people to, which is called The Heart Map Solution by Doc Chilray and Howard Martin. Because becoming a Salbona leader means that you definitely need to develop your heart's intelligence. And the byproducts of doing it are through practices of appreciation. So we did give Sam a lot of practices of appreciation. And what happened, I'll just give you some of the results without...
Please.
Yeah. So, you know, she wanted balance. Well, now Sam, on her most stressful day, she stays calm and grounded, which allows her to tap into her intuitive knowing and make decisions and envision the big picture of what needs to be accomplished. Let me think. Regarding her team, she now sees the gifts in her people rather than constantly judging them. So they're able to bring their best self forward. And, in fact, one of her key people, who is the one that goes and does the cold calling and finds the potential clients, said in the beginning to her that you don't get me, that you're not a good leader. And at the end of her journey, you know, 6 months later, actually, said to her in a room full of executives that she was one of the best leaders he had ever worked for. And regarding profits, this was the amazing things that she was amazed at. Within just 6 months of being coached, her team increased their book of business by 50% from the year before. And within 12 months, her team was at 150% of their goals. And by the end of the year, in 2011, 13 months later, her team was the number one producer in the entire bank. And that's just some of the benefits of, you know, when you become a Salbona leader.
Was she, I watched a videotape of a presentation you made at University of Southern California, and was she one of the clients that stood up and testified to, or
yes.
was that another three different people?
No, that was her. She's a Trojan like me.
Yeah, I mean, it was so impressive. And is that available on your website, that video? Can they people?
No, it's not. It will be. We're going to put it on. We're creating a website for Salbona Leadership right now that will be accompanying with the book, because then people can go on and get best practices, although there's a coach's corner in the book that has a lot of practices, exercises, and self-observations that people can do. Video will be available.
I want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you. So your website is www.susan, S-U-S-A-N, Inouye, I-N-O-U-Y-E.com.
Right.
And your email is susan@susaninouye.com, correct?
Absolutely.
People can reach you that way. Because I think, you know, anyone who's interested in learning more about this, until the book's available, they're going to have to reach out to you. And that's not such a bad thing.
Yeah, I think the good thing about the book, it will take you through the process. And the process is actually very, it's simple, but it's deep. I used to use a lot of things to help clients. And when I found the gift-centered approach, it was like the through line and thread that I'd been looking for years, because I realized that if you just start with gifts, blind spots, and patterns, that and go deep in those areas and develop the intelligence of the head, heart, and body, that things just unfold, that, like with Sam, that she couldn't even imagine, she said.
Well, there's one last question. We only have a couple minutes left, but did you ever run into a manager you had to give up on?
You know, the only time that I really give up on anybody, and it's really in the beginning when I talk, is if they're not ready. And there was a manager years ago that I gave up in the beginning. I didn't give up on him. I just told him he wasn't ready. I said, because you keep defending everything that you do. And I said, when you're ready to stop defending and look towards yourself, then give me a call. And he did 6 months later, and he turned into be one of the most amazing leaders possible. He ended up increasing the profitability of his region by going from 30% of his monthly goals to 70%. He became the most the best region in the entire company. 1 year they had awards, and they won every single award, from most profitability to best customer service to he won the best general manager of the year. And he's gone on to start his own company.
I love that notion of readiness, because one of my favorite, I end my program every session with no act of kindness, no matter how small, is ever wasted. And that's because you may not see an effect right away, but when he was ready, he called you back. You know, you made an impression.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think that
you never
none of us is
wrong. I mean, gift-centered approach teaches us not to look for what's wrong or what's missing. It teaches us to look for what's there within us.
Right. We are at the end of our time for this program, but www.susaninouye.com and susan@susaninouye.com if you want to reach out to her. Her book will be coming out later this year, The Millennial Solution, Salbona Leadership to Engage Every Generation. I will be back after the break to talk about my perspective on the role of forgiveness and what I call miracle management in being the leader you always wanted to be. Thank you, Susan, for being with us today.
Thank you, Christine.
What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace speak at a glance without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace, every Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
What if every day was a good day for business? Because every decision you made was the best choice. What if you could receive regular input from credible sources and could acquire all the precise information you need, exactly when you need it, so you can make the right decision every single time? Because There's More challenges you to make better decisions. Join Laura Ellis every Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, and 2 p.m. GMT on the Voice America Business Channel and learn how to think differently for better decisions, better business.
You're listening to The Leadership Hour with Christine Cowan-Gascoigne. If you have a question or comment about today's program or want more information, send an email to info@theleadershipcompany.com. That's info@theleadershipcompany.com. Now, back to The Leadership Hour.
Welcome back. Today, we've been talking to Susan Inouye, an executive coach who focuses on gift-centered leadership and what she calls sawabona, which is seeing, well, we've talked about it in the earlier segments. And I want to tie that in with some other related thoughts about leadership that I've had over the years. In fact, back in 1997, I wrote an article that appeared in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland's major newspaper, on the subject of managing to forgive is sign of leadership. You know, before you can focus on the gifts that someone else brings to the job, to you as their boss, or to you as their colleague, you have to get past your anger. And so it begins with forgiving. You know, I once had the notion that good leaders were people who relentlessly weeded out the bad people and the bad products and fixed the bad systems and the bad strategies. And in my, what I thought was kinder and gentler, maybe more feminine approach to all of this, you know, I never would fire the bad people. I would not discard them. Instead, I'd send them to training or counseling or to some other job better suited to their temperament. And I awoke each day motivated to do battle against evil and to make the world a bit safer for everyone else. What I failed to realize is the extent to which anger fueled my campaign. Anger at my parents for how they had treated me or how I thought they had mistreated me as a child. I no longer think that. Anger at teachers who had seemingly thwarted my progress. You know, anger at bosses who failed to listen and anger at God for creating a cruel world. And even when I did become aware of how angry I was, I didn't understand how destructive, particularly self-destructive, it was. Rabbi Mark Gelman said on a morning program in February of 1997 that being angry and harboring a grudge is a lot like swallowing poison and expecting it to hurt the other person. Recent studies have shown that angry people have more trouble forming and sustaining intimate relationships. We victimize ourselves with our anger, and we generally don't have a clue that we are doing it. So how do you get rid of that anger? Well, what if you came to realize that every misguided, bizarre, destructive, or even evil act performed by anyone was driven by fear? Fear of losing a job, fear of losing a mate, fear of seeming inadequate, fear of being too stupid or too fat, for example, and made perfect sense to that individual at that moment, to you, if you were that person, given your knowledge, skills, and prior life experiences. Coming to understand that you would have behaved exactly the way that other person did had you lived their life is the key to forgiveness. They can't help themselves, so forgive them and work to increase their knowledge or skills to reduce fear and elicit more productive behavior in the future. This advice applies to yourself most importantly. All those stupid things you've done made sense at the time, so forgive yourself and focus your energy on learning how to improve. Good leaders stay above the battlefield, refusing to assign blame. And in their clear-headed thoughtfulness, they're able to chart a constructive course for all of us. Leaders and managers who understand this concept develop an open, trusting, what we could call gift-centered style that brings out the best in everyone, their employees, their colleagues, their bosses, their customers, and then it even works in your family. Leaders who have already fine-tuned their technical skills will find managing to forgive their best weapon, their best defense against being a manager from hell, and they'll live longer too. Another article I wrote later that same year, I entitled Miracle Management Can Change Your Life. And this is, you know, taking the ideas that Susan, well, I mean, they weren't that, this was almost 20 years ago, but Susan has refined these same ideas to a great extent and made them very accessible for all of us to use. But what I wrote at the time is, you know, we're all familiar with the concept. You catch more flies with honey than vinegar. Positive reinforcement is a stronger motivator than negative reinforcement. Praise works better than criticism. You know, try catching people doing something right. Each statement, you know, some of them are so common they're cliches, has been proven and re-proven by scientific experiment and observation to be true. Intellectually, we know this. Our parents knew it. Their parents knew it. Even our children have been taught this is true, but we don't live as if we believe it to be true. We construct, for example, a juvenile justice system and an adult criminal justice system that punishes people. Secondary schools that give detentions freely, leaving a book in a classroom once earned my daughter a 10-minute detention. It drove me crazy. Parents who routinely ground or spank their children and organizational performance management systems that clearly spell out the steps to getting fired. It's called the disciplinary process, but no equivalent process for getting promoted. As a society, we failed to act on these our most fundamental and widely held beliefs that focusing on the positive is better than the negative. So the disconnect tends to occur when we feel attacked. I mean, if the flies bite, we want to attack them back and make them as miserable as we are. They don't deserve honey. We may want to get even with the 17-year-old who steals our car. We want to make him pay for his actions. And so we turn our backs on the knowledge that honey, positive reinforcement, praise, and catching someone doing something right, what you could call kindness and love and gift-centered approach, would be far more effective in the long run. And we perpetuate exactly the kind of environment that created the criminal or problem employee in the first place, hostile, fearful, and attacking. Hostile attacking behavior engenders hostile attacking behavior over and over again. The cycle can be broken by informed people like judges, for instance, who reduce very harsh sentences, unnecessarily harsh sentences, by wise individuals who refuse to feel attacked. There's a wonderful story in Ohio about an Amish family who about 15 years ago visited and forgave the young man in jail who had driven drunk into their buggy, killing three of their children. And by managers who see their chance to work miracles, literally, by seeing the good in each and every worker and each and every situation. Managers who see the best in us bring out the best in us and are often catalysts for miraculous transformations. So be one of those managers and work a miracle for your employees. The healing will be as much yours as theirs. This is Christine Cowan-Gascoigne signing off for this week. And please join us next week, 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time, Wednesday, 6 a.m. Pacific Time. And remember, no act of kindness, no matter how small, is ever wasted. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Leadership Hour, where leadership and inspiration intersect. Please join your host, Christine Cowan-Gascoigne, again next Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.